This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new VSiN.com. We've got a fresh new look on the website, enhanced navigation, a mobile first focus, and a whole lot more. And one might call it a super front page on the site today. It's a one-stop shop for your Super Bowl 58 betting needs. We've got spreads and total predictions, best bets, betting systems and analysis, trends, prop history, MVP thoughts, and a whole lot more. Plus, with football winding down, our college hoops and NBA experts have been hard at work providing daily betting reports. We've got a breakdown of the 10-game slate in the association tonight. And seven top 25 teams in action in college hoops today. But let's get back to the Super Bowl.
And we have a hire, Stormy.
Ooh,
we have a hire.
You love to hear
news,
it.
Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald will be your next head coach of the, drum roll please, the Seattle Seahawks.
Wow.
So
okay.
Seattle, which wanted to go offense, they kind of wanted to go offense. They decide to take Mike McDonald, young 36-year-old, did a wonderful job this year with the Baltimore Ravens. John Schneider's first chance to hire a coach. And now Mike McDonald, according to Adam Schefter on Twitter, that he is now going to be the man in Seattle. Good for him, you know, and I think John Schneider gets a guy that he can work with, understand, develop. They have not been good defensively up there in the last couple of years. So I think this move will help them. What they do offensively remains to be seen. Fascinating here, Stormy. Snyder and Quinn were linked together, and Quinn's been linked to a bunch of places. If Quinn doesn't get Washington, I think Quinn's window of becoming a head coach might be over with. I really do. Now, I don't know where. I mean, McDonald took the Seattle job, which means Washington didn't offer him. It's just right there in his backyard, right? And so where does Washington go? The most remarkable thing to me is Washington sitting there, and they don't even call Bill Belichick on the phone. Like, why wouldn't you interview Vrabel and Belichick if you're Washington?
I don't know, Michael. And that's honestly what I wanted to get into with you. I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, too. But if you're the Washington Commanders and you're going through all of this stuff, new ownership, you're going to do the new stadium, you're going to do all these new things, why do you not go get a coach that has a proven track record of winning and will move the needle for your franchise? Like, who are you going to go out and get now? Aaron Glenn? Is that the next move for you? I understand the desire that they initially had and the thought process of getting a guy like Ben Johnson, who is going to be this bright young offensive mind. Obviously, whether or not they wanted him ultimately to get the job after all the things that we had already talked about and Ben Johnson electing to stay with the Detroit Lions, but Bill Belichick, it makes all the sense in the world, you would think. This was a team that before we were even talking about the Falcons with Bill, people were like, "Oh, the Commanders, that just makes too much sense."
And then they put out a release. They're not interested. Oh. And then they hired Adam Peters. And I've been asking people around the league, like, why wouldn't they talk to him? And they said, probably because Adam Peters, he wants to run the team. And so, you know,
the control
to me,
thing again.
Peters started his career. It's all about the same thing Walsh talked about back at 75, guard your desk. It's really what it is. I have a hard time understanding what Seattle did, what Atlanta did, that's fine. Snyder has been very good in Atlanta and Seattle, won a Super Bowl up there. He's been responsible for the players, hasn't had the ultimate authority. He worked for Pete. This is his opportunity. He's done a lot of good things up there. I'm sure he would admit he's missed on some things. Atlanta, strange, didn't want Lamar. This front office, they've won 21 games over 3 years. Their team has been built through Terry Fontenot's vision. Not so good, but they wanted to stay with Fontenot and Rich McKay running the team, clearly, even though they say he's no longer going to do that. Okay, you don't want to go with the greatest coach of all time. He's too old, yada, yada. But Washington, you've had no success. You've been just toiling around in just a stench. And if you bring in some unproven coach and it doesn't go good, I'm just going to tell you, those fans are skeptical as to begin with. Nobody's looking for a reason to go out to FedEx Field. And I mean, look, there's only, you know, Belichick can walk into the Capitol building and get the meeting with any of those senators he wants. You think the next coach they're going to hire? I mean, even if you don't want, and everybody say, well, Lombardi, you're shilling for your friend. Yeah, I am. I am saying it's, I can't logically wrap my head around it, but throw him out of the mix. Why wouldn't they talk to Vrabel? Why wouldn't they just go talk to Vrabel? Like, Vrabel's better than any coaches on the available right now other than Belichick.
Like, I understand that there's this youth movement ever since I really think like Sean McVay was hired and he was this just wondrous mind. And now you have the longevity with him being the head coach for however long it appears that he wants to do it or you want to have him there. And Mike McDonald, even how old is he? 36, 37, like another young hire. Canales, very, very young. Is that the thing? But Mike Vrabel's not old. Like, I get that Bill Belichick is in his 70s, but Mike Vrabel to me is not old, and he's proven himself as a great head coach. I still didn't understand Tennessee moving on from him this year.
I can't either, you know, and I can't understand how you could honestly sit there and say Aaron Glenn, you know, pick another name. Who else are they talking to? They were talking to McDonald. You know, is it going to be Aaron? They were flying to Detroit to interview Aaron Glenn. Like, you're going to tell me that Aaron Glenn, who's operated a defense that ranked 20-something in the league. Now, look, he's got a great future, perhaps. But, you know, that defensive team, it wasn't there. So, who, Slovic staying in Houston, who are you hiring?
Can you real quickly, just to go on a little tangent here, give me a little inside baseball? I know that Ben Johnson obviously didn't end up completing the interview with the Commanders, but when you're going out to visit a team and you're interviewing for your head coaching job, two guys that are on the same team, how awkward is that for those two guys? Like, how awkward would that have been for Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn to have this talk about, hey, here's my vision. Hey, here's my vision. Here's who I'm going to bring along. I feel like that would be uncomfortable.
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, it's, look, that this is the NFL. You're in a competitive world against a team, and you're also competing against other coaches for jobs. You kind of know that going in. And the vision that Glenn has is probably going to be completely different than the vision that Ben Johnson has. Ben Johnson's been around Adam Gase. That's kind of was his training background, right? And Glenn's been around Bill Parcells. He's been around Dennis Allen and that New Orleans Saints Sean Payton program, so, which has got a lot of Parcells in it as well. So, you know, I think that they're two completely different programs. So it's easy to say. And, you know, I think a lot of it too is, I'm sure, you know, is this a good job? I get, is this a good job? Because it seems like they're, from what I'm told, there's a lot of the minority owners want to get a bigger name in here. And they're fighting within themselves that they're asking the same. Let me say it. They're not fighting. They're asking the same questions you and I are asking. Like, are we sure this is the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Are we sure keeping everybody here, Martin Mayhew, Marty Herney, all these people that have been responsible for this team? Are we sure that's the right thing to do? I think that's really what's going on. And if you're a Washington fan, you have to ask yourself, are we really sure we're getting the... Now, I know Adam Peters comes with a complete, you know, endorsement. And the media is convinced he's the next coming of Branch Rickey. But he also was the man responsible for your 49ers to take Trey Lance.
Yeah. Well, with Washington, like, we saw the way that things change, even just with training camp this year with new ownership, right? That was something that got people excited about the new trajectory this franchise was going to go. And then this is your first real opportunity to make significant change and show what you're going to do and what you're going to be. And you don't even have the conversation with the Hall of Fame coach, greatest coach of all time, Bill Bell. It's mind boggling with him available.
I mean, let's just say this. Let's say, why wouldn't you as an owner, as Josh Harris, and you as a general manager of Adam Peters, wouldn't you want to sit down and learn from a guy that's won 6 Super Bowls, that's built programs over sustainable success, and try to understand what made him so successful? You don't have to hire him. You can just listen to him.
Yeah,
he knows way more football than any of you know. He knows way more football than Adam Peters could ever possibly know. So, like, let's not kid ourselves here. You're intimidated to go into the room to interview him because he knows way more than you know. Like, and that's the issue here. And if you're a fan of the Washington football team, you've got to say, wait a minute, don't we deserve better than that? Shouldn't we want the best? Which is shocking, because as a fan of the 76ers, Josh Harris has always gone after the guy that he, you know, the big name guy. Now, he's always gone after that person from the analytical world. And maybe that's where they're headed. Maybe they want to become an analytical football team. That won't work. I'm just going to tell you, that won't work. Because the analytical community, and there was an article written, 5-6 years ago, that momentum doesn't exist in sports. Let's just put that out there. Like, you need analytics, but you also need somebody who understands the game of football. I was told reliably today that, you know, Peters, it didn't surprise them, someone that knows Peters, that didn't surprise them that he's not talking to him because I think he's intimidated by it. You have to be. It makes no sense not to.
Yeah.
It makes no sense not to. If Vrabel, too, it makes no sense not to talk to Vrabel.
I was going to say also, ask Brandon Staley how just having that analytics thought process works out for you long term as a head coach. But what I said yesterday was, I understand from an age standpoint thinking that maybe Bill's only going to be able to coach two or three more years. But if you get the wrong guy and you get somebody who doesn't work out for you, that's all that the length and longevity is going to be anyways. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Again, the breaking news, Mike McDonald, the new head coach for the Seattle Seahawks, the youngest active head coach in the league at 36 years old. We'll continue to break that down and a whole lot more as it pertains to Super Bowl 58 throughout the rest of the hour.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Looking for a super offer for Super Bowl 58? DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58. With the code VSIN, DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Okay, Michael, so we've talked a lot about Bill Belichick today and the fact that he has not been able to find a landing spot, but we're seeing reports from Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal that the Eagles were very interested in Belichick had Nick Sirianni not agreed to the coaching changes and agreeing to fire certain coaches and coordinators. The Eagles reached out through him, according to Bedard, through back channels. Here he is on 985 The Sports Hub.
Told you guys that before the end of the season that teams had already reached out to Bill, back channel on Bill. I thought the Falcons were definitely one of them. I'm now pretty convinced that the Eagles were the other one. When things were going south, they thought this might end poorly with Sirianni, and I wouldn't be surprised, given the relationship that Howie and Bill have, that the Eagles were one of those teams to back channel through Bill.
So we hear that about the Eagles, Michael, and also Jerry Jones talking about how there's no doubt that he could work with Bill Belichick. Two teams that ended up keeping their coaches this year were interested in Bill, or could be potentially next year if there's an opening.
Well, I think this is news. Let me say that first. I think it is news. But here's what I don't understand about the Bernard report. He said in there, if things went south with Sirianni, that they would make a move. Didn't things go south? Didn't they ask anybody at Wawa? Didn't they go south? Like, what more was going to have to happen? They went south. And so they're giving him a mulligan is what they're doing. They're saying it went south. They're going to give him a mulligan and see if he can fix the problems by bringing Vic in and bringing Kellen Moore in and going to be to do what I'm not sure what he does, but he'll do that, whatever that is. Right. You know, so what was that song by Zach Brown? It is whatever that is. Right. I mean, so like, I don't know. We'll see. But to me, it's news. Here's what I just tweeted. Washington is sitting there with an opportunity to at least talk to Vrabel or Belichick. And yet the teams that they're going to compete against for the foreseeable future, if they have some problem, Philadelphia, if Dallas, if the Giants have a bad year, they're probably going to try to make Belichick their head coach. Why wouldn't you at least talk to him? Do you value Adam Peters that much that you won't talk to him?
I'm right there with you, Michael. It is a very, very interesting situation. But I personally think that if he did end up going to Philadelphia or go to the Dallas Cowboys potentially next year, that that'd be a better landing spot for him. He'd be in a better situation with the talent and pieces around him. So, hey, maybe take a year off and then get a championship contender, Bill. Do what you need to do. Speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, more comments that Jerry Jones made at the Senior Bowl this week regarding Dak Prescott's contract extension. Take a listen.
I won't be addressed addressing at any time here one contract, one player at all. That is not, let me emphasize, and I'm in a plural, that is not in any way being iffy about any player that we've got, whether it be Lamb, Parsons, Prescott, Smith, you name them. That's not being unequivocal.
He also added, Dak has done, quote, nothing to change my mind about any promise for the future. I think I've said that we will go as far as Dak takes us in the playoffs. Remember that. News or noise, Michael. Jerry commenting but not commenting on Dak's contract extension.
Well, I think what he's saying is we have to figure out where everything's going to be. He's putting together a puzzle. And so it's not about just getting one guy done, getting the next guy. He's got to get them all. He's got to put the puzzle together. And that's not an easy thing to do, right? And so Dak's going to be on the team. Dak has a contract. But what he's trying to say is there's other things that have to happen before I get to them. And it's a giant puzzle, and we've got to figure out how we're going to get this done. And I don't think he's going to comment on it until it all kind of comes together. He knows what's at stake. Yeah. He knows who he has to sign. He's going to sign Lamb. He's going to have to sign Parsons. And he's going to have to redo Dak. Now, after that, all bets are off.
Yeah. Prescott, just like Mike McCarthy, has 1 year left on his deal for Prescott. It's $34 million left in his contract. He does have the no franchise tag clause in the contract. Also, speaking of just like news or noise, how about all the noise around Dak Prescott from his teammates' family members? I thought that stuff was crazy about like Micah Parsons' brother saying, if you take $40 million or pack your bags, and CeeDee Lamb's mom saying Dak ain't it. Like, how is this happening?
I don't know how it is, but you know, we live in the world of social media, and I don't think you can condemn, you know, it's people's just can't wait to give their opinion out. So I'm not sure, you know, how you take all that, right? I'm not sure how it all fits together. And, you know, look, let's be clear. I don't think we talk enough about this, but when you make the most money and you don't deliver, you're going to get attacked by your teammates, by everybody, right? You're going to get attacked. It's just what it is. I don't think you could change that. And, you know, Dak is probably, there's resentment in every locker room over play. We finally heard, after I got ridiculed all offseason, Stormy, about the New York Football Giants by every Giant fan, even my good friend Carl Banks ripped me, right? You don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were upset in that locker room about Daniel Jones getting ahead of Saquon. I said exactly that.
And that's a whole nother layer that we're going to have to unpack this offseason. What happens with Saquon? Because he's got to go through that whole process once again. But let's keep it on the quarterbacks here for a moment, because Tom Brady went on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and had this to say about 49ers QB Brock Purdy.
I think Brock's done a great job with the opportunity. You know, he got it and he's taken advantage of it. He was a late round pick. I know he's got a chip on his shoulder, and he wants to go out there and prove every day that he's the right fit for that team. And there's it's a great organization they're running. I really respect Kyle, but Brock's done a hell of a job.
News or noise coming from the GOAT himself. Purdy's got a chip on his shoulder and wants to prove he's the right fit for San Francisco forever.
Well, I don't think you've heard one ex-player that played the position of quarterback giving Brock Purdy a hard time, because they know how hard it is and they've seen what he's been able to do. And so for me, you know, I think that was an endorsement from the GOAT. He clearly said he's the right fit for the team. And everybody that watches tape for a living, that understands the art of football, that understands what it takes to win, sees Purdy as a really good player. And it didn't take last week's game to convince me.
Mm-hmm. Was a masterful second half, though. So I'm glad it at least got some of the naysayers more on board. One quarterback who is no longer playing here, but made it close. And boy, were the Detroit Lions fun to watch, is Jared Goff. And he's due to make $27.3 million if the team does nothing. But Jared Goff, you know, he's open to a contract extension. Here's Jared.
In regards to my future, it's not up to me. I love this place, and we'll see what happens as time goes on here. But, yeah, I love this place, and love Dan, love all the coaches, love all my teammates. And it's not out of my hands in some ways. You know, it's up to my representatives and obviously the people upstairs.
News or noise to you? Because I feel like it's obvious they should keep rolling with this guy. He's been great.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to the contract, right? Hayden Hooker, they drafted. Where is he? Like, where does he fit in their plans, right? Because if you go ahead and give a five-year contract to Goff, then you're not going to, you know, Hooker's going to just play out as the backup and go on. You know, maybe you can get something for him, put him in the preseason, all of a sudden you can get your value back. Smart pick. I think it's a good pick. But it also, if you think he's really good, maybe you go one more year with Goff and then you decide to then change out. I don't know. It gives you some options, you know, and I think to me, what you don't want to do is tie your team up with a very bad quarterback contract and then, of course, make everybody on the team upset about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't foresee his extension being particularly long, but I love what Jared Goff has done in operating in that offense and seeing if he can keep doing it for a couple more years. I haven't heard much about Hendon Hooker lately. Like, I know he was coming off of the injury last year, but through camp and everything, like, personality wise, I feel like I never really heard his name.
No, I mean, because we did, you know, he was coming off the knee injury. We haven't seen him. He's practicing. But I think what they do, what they say, what goes on inside that, they watched him every day at practice. We didn't. I think that's kind of, that's going to be very revealing. It's a little bit like what they don't say. It's the same thing we would say about Trey Lance. Right. We said the same thing. Like, for all the PR that was coming out of there that he's great, they were saying something different after practices.
Yeah, he's third string for the Dallas Cowboys for a reason.
I mean, for all the things that, you know, I can go through my timeline and talk about all the things that they told me about. Oh, look what they're saying. You know, look, they're saying it because they're trying to trade him. I mean, come on.
Well, and again, like, let's talk about San Francisco 49ers. You give up all you do, make such a terrible pick, and you just stumble into Brock Purdy as the last pick in the draft. Unbelievable. We've got to step aside, reset, and with hour two of the Lombardi Line when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN daily newsletter. Goes straight to your inbox every day, absolutely free. Today, Mike Somich dives into the early Super Bowl line movement and the why behind the total ticking down to 47 in the big game, despite the betting action being heavy to the over. Plus, one of the exotic Super Bowl props everybody loves is the national anthem length. Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin dive into what we can expect from Reba McEntire this year and her history of shorter renditions. Fun fact, vsin.com/newsletter is how you can subscribe. That also, by the way, is a tease for something that we're going to get into tomorrow, some of those novelty props. Originally, Michael, we were planning on doing that today, but, you know, we had a little bit of news with Mike McDonald being the head coach of Seattle, so we had to push it off. But that just gives you an extra day to prep for, you know, getting your Gatorade research in, checking out the history of the coin toss. Get ready, Michael. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always go, won't you think if it's a chief win, it has to be red Gatorade? Don't you think that? I don't know. I got to do more research on that.
Do you want to know a fun fact?
I don't know the Reba McEntire thing.
Go ahead. Yeah, I love your fun
fact. I've got a fun fact about red Gatorade for you. It has never in the history of the Super Bowl been dumped on a game-winning head coach. Isn't that crazy? And that red is obviously the staple color of Kansas City and San Francisco. You would think maybe this could be the air. Who knows?
Yeah, I would have thought that. So yellow is the one?
Yellow is up there. It's one. Michael, listen, we got to just step aside. We'll do this tomorrow. I promise. I've got a full research breakdown for you. It's going to be riveting. Just give the people what they want. But today, we actually have some historical trends that are very football specific that I think that you're going to enjoy a little bit more than Gatorade. That's good for you?
I'm ready for you. Fire away.
So Steve Mackinnon posted an article on VSiN.com yesterday. He does this every single year, breaking down some of the more interesting betting trends and systems around the game. And you know how sometimes on this show we do the meaningful or meaningless trend segment? Well, he has already done the nitty-gritty hard work and just pulled out some that he feels are impactful and really do correlate with winning. And one of them, which I think is really interesting because we've talked so much about the run game and the importance of it for both Kansas City and San Francisco in this game, teams that rush for more yards in the Super Bowl are 42 and 15 straight up, 40, 14 and 3 ATS. And you just wrote in your article today, Michael, about how Andy Reid might hate calling runs, but he's been doing it and it's been working out for this Chiefs team.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he hates doing it, but he knows that it's the best way to protect his offensive line. See, I think one of the things, and this is, we have to always analyze why, okay? When you don't kick the 3 points and go up 17, you say, okay, well, we were trying to go up, 21. All right, the 4 points does matter. But going up 17 had an effect on what Kyle Shanahan could do. And that would take him out of his drop, out of his play action pass sheet, put him more in a drop back pass game, down 3 scores. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing here. Andy Reid knows that the effect of being able to have more balance in his offense has taken the pressure off one of the areas where he's weak, which is the offensive tackle position, which he wasn't expecting it to be weak. He cashed in Orlando Brown for Juwan Taylor, feeling like he and Donovan Smith figuring like they were going to be better than what he had last year. That didn't work out. That did not work out. Donovan Smith hasn't been as good, even though Orlando Brown wasn't good, and Juwan Taylor hasn't been very good, and they paid him a lot of money. So you understand why, the why behind it. This is what drives me crazy about everybody go for it on fourth down. Nobody sits there and says, what is the effect of the decision? What is the momentum? What could we create if we kick 3 points, right? What could we create? I think to me, this is the same thing with teams that can run the football effectively, that get to the Super Bowl. They can run the game out. They control the line of scrimmage. They do things that matter in football games. And we all know this, and I'm a proponent of it. I don't want to run the ball to score points. Running the ball kicks field goals, but running the ball allows you to control the game. And that's important.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily, just based on these two teams specifically, if there's going to be a big run game edge one way or the other. As a 49ers fan, I'm very afraid of Isaiah Pacheco and the success that he has had lately, especially scoring the football. He's at 8 touchdowns in his last 7 games and is averaging over 70 yards per game on the ground in that time. And San Francisco has struggled to stop the run. But on the other side of that, I feel like the 49ers are not going to have a problem running the football against what is the 26th ranked run defense in the National Football League, and they're not going to pull a Ravens and say, no, we're not going to try to utilize our best asset against this defense, especially considering how good the KC secondary is. So let's go to the passing part of this. Teams that average more passing yards per attempt in the Super Bowl are 44 and 13 straight up, 37, 17 and 3 ATS. And we know Brock Purdy in the regular season averaged the league best 9.6 yards per attempt to Mahomes, just 7 yards per attempt. In the postseason, they've been pretty equal, but Purdy still has a little bit of a higher number.
Right, and this is an important stat for me. Always was, always will be, is you got to be in the high sevens, really. And what, and this again goes back to the whole redefining of the offense by the Chiefs, because they kept trying to make plays down the field. And when you break them down and when you go through what they've been able to accomplish, right, over these 4 games, right, as you go through these 4 games, it's been more of a dink and dunk. They've only had 8 plays over 35 yards in those 4 games, right? And the most, and the biggest play came against the Bengals, right? The 67-yarder Rashid Rice was in the Bengal games, right? And since then, they've had 18 plays between 29 and 20 yards, okay? So they have been, their explosive plays haven't been to that level to get you up. Now, it's better than what they had during the season, because during the season, he was holding the ball and taking sacks. Mm-hmm. So they're able to, by running it, they're able to get more play action, and they're starting to make not the one play touchdown drives, they're starting to make the touchdown drives by accumulating good plays, and that's helped them become a little bit more explosive in terms of these last 4 games. Think about it. They've had, basically, they've had 23 plays from 35 yards to 20 yards in 4 games. They've had that. They've had that. 23 plays in 4 games. So you're basically averaging about 6 plays, somewhere 4 plays a game, or 6 plays a game of making 20 yard or more plays, which is good. So they've kind of increased their explosiveness by running the football.
This next one won't surprise you, Michael. We talk so much about the importance of the turnover battle. Teams that win the turnover battle tend to win the game 35-9-1 ATS, just under 80%. The 49ers had a significantly better turnover differential in the regular season. They were plus 10 to the Chiefs minus 11, but both are plus 2 in turnover differential this postseason. Who do you think is more likely to turn over the ball based on these two teams?
I think the 49ers are. I think the Chief, I mean, Mahomes is very careful with the football. And I think the one thing that's got to concern you is what happened to Purdy last week. Pressure inside forced the interception, right? Pressure inside. That's where the Chief strength is. Chris Jones, pressure inside. That's where they're going to get. That's where they got Garoppolo in the first game. That's where they got Chris Jones pushed that pocket back. These guards for San Francisco are not stout. They don't hold the line where the pocket doesn't get collapsed. That's what worries you to me. And look, and the other thing is Moody. Let's put the kickers in this. You know, Moody is very inconsistent in terms of making kicks.
Sure.
We know that. He's a great kicker, and I think he's going to be a really great kicker down the road. The Chiefs don't miss, and the 49ers do, and turnovers, missed field goals are turnovers.
And you mentioned it already, but like Mahomes interception-free football this postseason, he hasn't thrown a pick his last six postseason starts. They've had two lost fumbles so far, but you know, pick-free football for him. Meanwhile, Brock Purdy, one of the things that he gets a lot of flack in is those turnover-worthy plays. So certainly a concern from that standpoint. And one more that's really critical, teams that win the time of possession battle, 41-16 and 39-15-3 ATS, so just over 72%. And you wrote in your article today, if the 49ers front doesn't improve and doesn't become the force they need, this new Chiefs approach will control the ball for 40 minutes, score 27 points, and walk away with a win.
That's what's going to happen. The Chiefs are going to control the ball. If they try to play zone and they drop the spots and they try to rally, and Mahomes is going to be, he's going to throw four incomplete passes the whole day. And that probably is because they dropped two passes, and they're going to just have six, seven, eight play drives. They're going to take field goals when they get them, and they're going to eat up clock. And the 49ers are going to have eight possessions. And, it, you know, Buffalo had 37 minutes. Kansas City only had the ball for 22 minutes and scored 27 points. So, you know, Kansas City was able to get it done. But Kansas City was only in third down five times in that game.
Yeah.
They were making plays on second down, just 10 yards, 12 yards, all that. So, yeah, I think time of possession, it's, again, what do you do with the football? But when you keep it away from Mahomes, or you keep it, especially if you keep it away from Mahomes the way they're playing, that makes it harder.
To further emphasize the importance of those four stats that we just went through right now. So again, rushing the football, pass yards per attempt, fewest turnovers, possession battle. Teams that hold an edge in at least three of those four categories are 40-6 straight up, covering it at 80% clip. Teams that win all four, 26-0, covering 96% of the time. The Bucks were the last team to sweep all four categories. We're going to hit the break, but we're wrapping things up on a Wednesday with a Why Not Wednesday, looking at some long shot props and see if I can get Michael to turn the tide and say why not.